Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'd like to talk to you about my favorite things. No, wait, that didn't come out right. Don't worry, I'm not about to run down a list of my favorite songs or books or my favorite sports teams or bourbons or whatever. I mean the song, My Favorite Things. You know, the one that goes like this.
Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things.
That's how almost all of us first heard this Rodgers and Hammerstein song, in the version that Julie Andrews sang as the character of Maria in the film The Sound of Music. But there's another classic version of My Favorite Things, where jazz great John Coltrane takes that lilting three-quarter waltz time and turns it into something almost exotic. Now, some people like the Julie Andrews version. Some like this John Coltrane arrangement. Elvis Costello, in his song This Is Hell, leaves no doubt about which one he likes.
My favorite things are playing again and again, but it's by Julie Andrews and not by John Coltrane. This is hell.
This is hell.
This is hell.
This is hell.
Yeah, I get the feeling Elvis Costello isn't the biggest Sound of Music fan. The Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, though, is coming to American network TV in just over a week, and there's no way to stop it. Coming up in a few minutes, it's a Soundcheck Smackdown on the Sound of Music. Is it a favorite thing, or is it a problem, like Maria? Also, live music from Detroit's own Danny Brown, the wild-haired, gap-toothed rapper, shows us that underneath his funny and profane songs, he's really a pop music classicist at heart. But speaking of classics, with the Thanksgiving holiday closing in, many of us will be spending a lot of time with our families this week. So here at Soundcheck, we thought it would be a good time to talk about musical compatibility between you and your parents. Parents have their own tried-and-true hits, their classics. You have yours. So we're asking this week, have you ever tried to introduce new music to your parents? How successful were you? You can post your response at soundcheck.org or leave your story on our voicemail, 866-939-1612. Joining us with his thoughts on the subject is Paul Ford, the Brooklyn-based writer who joins us occasionally on Soundcheck. Paul, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have you attempted to turn your parents on to the music of your generation?
I got to be honest, I gave up an awfully long time ago. you know, with my mom, it's like, yeah, my mother, we were once driving in a car and she had some classical, some Beethoven, but it was peppered with loon calls. Like she had found this album that was classical plus loons.
Yeah.
And I realized at that point that...
that she was lost.
Yeah, we're never going to like... we're not going to catch up from there. And then my dad just kind of is... I'm actually, as I get older, I find myself doing it, going like, you know, that's a good song. Like that kind of, that's a catchy number. But it's very arbitrary. Like I remember when I was in college, I would have like a Tori Amos album. He's like, that's good music. I like that. And then Lisa Germano, he'd be like, it's garbage. Get rid of it. I like Prince, you know, who knows?
All right. But nothing stuck.
No, we all have our own worlds.
All right. Here are some responses to our question. Again, the question is the risks and rewards of trying to introduce your parents to new music. Adore Adore on Twitter writes, I played some Emily Wells for the Rents, and they thought it was the bomb, the Symphonies album especially.
Everywhere in the Requiem makes a God I love shout and
That is the Symphony No. 6 called Fare Thee Well in the Requiem Mix by singer, songwriter, violinist, and looper Emily Wells. And for our listener Adore Adore on Twitter, that worked, going, you know, turning her parents onto that. I got to tell you, Paul, I took my teenage daughter to see Emily Wells, and she thought she was great, too. So there's something there. Yeah, she
little
seems
bit
to...
A little bit of pop DNA. You know, when you listen there, you got the strings. You know, there's everything is going on at once. It's almost guaranteed to catch somebody the right way.
Yeah. Colleen Marquise, also on Twitter, writes, tried to change my dad's mind about country music by having him listen to the Robert Plant and Alison Krauss album, Raising Sand, on a long car ride. Hashtag big fail.
Please read the letter. I nailed it to your door. It's crazy how it all turned out. We needed so much more.
Please read the letter from that album, Raising Sand, Robert Plant, Alison Krauss. Paul, are you surprised that that didn't work?
I mean, at this point, you got to, I mean, that's such a good album. You have to wonder about the father. You know, I mean, there's so many things to evaluate at that point. But if Robert Plant and Alison Krauss together, that's like one of the most pleasing pop combinations possible.
And a beautifully produced record and exquisite songwriting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe there's something else they need to work out.
All right, Colleen, there's some advice for you from Paul Ford, the Brooklyn-based writer who joins us occasionally on Soundcheck. You can follow him on Twitter at FTrain. And we're talking about, you know, the holidays are coming up. You're spending time with the family. Have you tried to introduce music you like to your parents? Boil the Frog.
Very interesting website.
Which is based on the... You know, the idea that if you put a frog in lukewarm water, it'll stay there. And then as you gradually turn the temperature, if it's gradual enough, the frog will boil without ever thinking it's getting too hot to leap out.
Exactly.
So if your parents like Joni Mitchell and you like Sky Ferreira, this website will gradually, the theory is, gradually move your parents from Joni Mitchell to Suzanne Vega to Martha Wainwright to Rufus Wainwright, on, until eventually you end up with bands like Chairlift and Asteroids Galaxy Tour and finally to Sky Ferreira.
But in the meantime, everyone's out playing football. I mean,
right.
You don't really have it.
So you're going to give us some shortcuts.
The problem is your average parent doesn't have anywhere near an 18-song attention span. More like 30 seconds. They're essentially teens. And so you got to speed that up. And I think also, like, you know, it's, you know what you're getting into when it comes to Thanksgiving. You know, the greatest fear for a lot of my friends is the George Winston December album. Like, that's a really, that's a high risk that's going to trot out. Because, you know, the mom's been waiting all year.
To play that record.
Whew, and it's finally, like, you know, she can, you know.
It actually begins with a song called Thanksgiving.
Just the sound of that jewel case opening and the memories that come with it. It's the same with classical. And what I've been thinking is, like, because, you know, you just might not want to hear that symphony again.
Right.
I think actually for a lot of that, for the more orchestral and synthesis-driven stuff, you might do really well if you sort of trot out a lot of bands from Iceland. It feels like they're really owning it. You know, like Sigur Rós in particular, even with opera, like the big operatic swells, it's going to hit that sweet spot. But it's also very inoffensive, especially because they speak in gobbledygook. So there's there's no risk that your parents are going to hear something really anatomical coming out of this, like with most of the music you might like. They're not going to turn to you and go, what have you done?
Iceland, the band Sigur Rós, from their album Valtari, which came out in 2012, although all of their albums have that kind of angel choir sound to
them. Yeah, and I almost want to say reverb-y, except I think they actually record in like a giant swimming pool or something. So
or in a cathedral, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost everyone has somebody in their family who's a Motown fan. If those are your parents, what's your best bet to get them to listen to something new?
I think Motown's a really tricky one because Motown is just pure pop culture DNA. I mean, it's like, you know, everyone knows Bruno Mars. Like, everyone is, like, listening to those albums. And so you're kind of in a safe space. They don't want to hear that, then they're just being angry and reactionary. The other thing, too, that's really tricky is that, you know, the actual genetic descendants of Motown are LMFAO. And, like, you know, that's like Berry Gordy's grandkid.
It's his nephew and his grandkid.
Yeah. So, I mean, even though at some level that is an inheritor of the ethos, and is I don't think your parents want to see a dancing robot.
Let's go. Party rock is in the house tonight. Everybody just have a good time.
Yeah.
And we gon' make you lose your mind.
Woo.
Everybody just have a good time.
A little bit of LMFAO. They are literally descended from Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown. Whether that'll help you get your Motown-loving parents to listen is a moot point, an open question. We talked a little bit about classical and opera, the Icelandic bands, especially Sigur Rós you mentioned. What about the Eagles?
Well, see, that's a tricky one. I think at that point you just leave. I mean, what are you going to do? Because then it's like, well, what about Mumford & Sons? But then it's like, is anybody winning?
Is that what this is about, Paul? This is family.
You're trying to create an experience, you know? The one that really throws me, too, is, like, you know, if they're really in the light rock and they like Genesis, then it's really easy to go, like, oh, well, Destroyer or Haim or any of these bands. But another level, it's sort of like, well, maybe you should just give up and listen to the Genesis. Like, look for a deep cut or realize that deep down you do like the album Invisible Touch. Just accept that. And and learn from your parents a little bit.
So, Paul, what's the big picture here? I mean, you know, yesterday the comedian Rob Delaney told us essentially that it's a fool's errand to try to turn your parents onto your music.
Well, I think there's a few things that you can learn from this whole experience. First of all, actually, as we're talking about, you know, what I'm thinking is like, that Joni Mitchell to Annie Lennox to Amy Mann to Sky Ferreira, that was actually chronological order as well as when those big albums came out. And I think it just goes to point out that you're basically the same as your parents. You have your pop music that's really exciting. And there's a direct lineal connection between the two things, between their music and your music for the most part. And it's the stuff you grew up with. So you're trying to bring them into your world. They're wondering about why your world is even relevant. But there is kind of a history lesson in there. The thing that you're trying to do by getting them to listen to something new, you're actually trying to connect back to what they used to listen to in an engaging way. And maybe just talking about that or pointing out like the connections between these different musicians and pointing out how much the stuff that you like is actually like the stuff that they like, you know, maybe that is the absolute secret to holiday happiness.
And then in another 20 years, when your kids come to you and try and do the same thing, you'll be ready for it and open to it.
I'm not going
to
listen to a single thing.
Paul Ford, the Brooklyn-based writer, joins us occasionally on Soundcheck. Follow him on Twitter at FTrain. Paul, good to see you. Happy holidays.
Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
Old people at this party, they've got a lot of style. They've got stamps of many countries. They've got passport smiles. Some are friendly, some are cutting. Some are watching it from the wings. Some are standing in the center, giving a get something. Photo beauty gets attention, and her eye paint's running down. She's got a rose in her teeth.
Chances are your parents introduced you to the sound of music at a tender age, but not everyone grew up to be a fan of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. With a live television version in the works, it's time to square off over the Sound of Music in a soundcheck smackdown. That's next. And later, the Detroit-based rapper Danny Brown performs in our studio. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This December, NBC will air a live television performance of the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, The Sound of Music. This highly publicized event starring Carrie Underwood, Stephen Moyer, and Audra McDonald has generated a fair amount of excitement and raised more than a few eyebrows. But even without a TV remake, The Sound of Music, most famously represented by the 1965 movie version starring Julie Andrews, is, shall we say, somewhat polarizing. So today, we want to know, is The Sound of Music one of your favorite things, or would you rather bid it so long farewell? It's a question for today's
Soundcheck Smackdown!
And joining me in the SmackDown ring today is Peter Kiesewalter, musician, arranger, and Sound of Music enthusiast and collector. Peter, good to see you again.
Hi.
And joining us from NPR in Washington, D.C. is Linda Holmes, host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour and writer for the blog Monkey See. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
So they are our two gladiators for today's SmackDown. And Linda, I'm going to start with you because you recently declared yourself to be a complete curmudgeon when it comes to Sound of Music in an article that our listeners can find on our website at soundcheck.org. Is it the musical? Is it the film? Is it the whole gestalt? What is it?
It is the whole gestalt. And I should say, if you can write, you know, a very lengthy list of things that you are curmudgeonly about with The Sound of Music, it means you've seen The Sound of Music a lot. So it all comes from a place of very deeply buried love that has now ossified into this other thing.
Well, as an old song says, it's a thin line between love and hate.
Exactly.
But Peter, you've stayed on the other side of that line all these years. How?
Through a mutual and profound respect for the genius of Rodgers and Hammerstein. And what I've come to realize is a crowning achievement in the history of Western music.
Well, now, the last time you were on Soundcheck, you brought in your band, the Brooklyn Rundfunk Orchestrata.
Correct.
Which did an album called The Hills Are Alive.
That's
which
right.
Was your take on The Sound of Music. And you're a collector of memorabilia as well? Am I remembering that right?
I'm not. Let me just set it straight here. I'm not a music theater aficionado, but there's something about The Sound of Music that resonates with me. And yes, I do collect, in particular, copies of the motion picture soundtrack. I have 140-something at this point, and my goal is to collect all 11 million of them.
You can have mine.
All right. Thank you.
Linda, Rodgers and Hammerstein, I mean, that tandem, that team of lyricist and composer, their work echoes throughout the great American songbook. But it also echoes throughout your list of what is wrong with The Sound of Music. What is wrong with Rodgers and Hammerstein?
Well, I would never go so far as to say what is wrong with Rodgers and Hammerstein. I love Little King and I love Little Carousel. I find myself, for example, as I said in the piece, if you're going to have a scene, as they do in the movie, that leads into a song where ultimately you're telling me 17 of your favorite things, none of them should be doorbells. That's all I'm saying.
But back in those days, doorbells were beautiful things. I mean, they made chimes. They weren't the electronic things that we have in our apartments here in New York City. They were actually wondrous carousels of musicality.
If you want to listen to a song called My Doorbell is a Wondrous Carousel of Musicality, that is completely rad. But for me, I'm underwhelmed.
It's the mundane. It's how mundane the list is what the charm is about that. It's not great things. It's just everyday things that are wonderful.
Well, no, but I can get behind schnitzel with noodles. You know, I can get behind certainly packages tied up with strings. I love free stuff. But when you get into the what do I love? Doorbells. I don't know. It's uninspiring to me.
Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad.
My favorite things from the film version of The Sound of Music. Linda Holmes, Peter Kiesewalter, I want to just tell you guys, there is an Elvis Costello song called This Is Hell, and one of the lines he sings is, my favorite things is playing again and again, but it's by Julie Andrews and not by John Coltrane.
Right. Right.
This is
uh-huh.
hell.
Uh-huh.
How much, Linda, of your problem with Sound of Music lies in the figure of Julie Andrews, if any?
None. I love Julie Andrews.
Okay.
It is not her fault. It is not her fault that she is compelled to begin the movie by declaring that the hills are alive with the sound of music when the movie has already by then firmly established that the hills are alive with the sound of wind.
But then you hear the church bells
mm-hmm.
right in that scene. Which are
sound
music.
Of wind. Sound of wind. But if they called the movie The Sound of Wind, no one would be listening to it.
So, I mean, if we do go back to the beginning and talk about the song Do Re Mi, I mean, putting aside, Linda, your quibble that starting at the beginning is not often the best place to start. Peter, you love this song from the film, right?
I do. I love every song. I think what they've done here, and this is the last thing that they wrote as a songwriting partnership, right? They've achieved what every artist and every musician strives for in their life, which is to strip their entire career of all the technique, artifice, pretense, orchestration, and return to that innocence, which came easy to them as children, but becomes very difficult as adults. Mm. And you hear it in the later works of everyone, of Satie, of musicians, Coltrane himself, who dropped the whole sheets of sound thing and tried to return to something simple and innocent, right? This is what they've done. They've made something sound so deceptively simple that it'll annoy people, right? Some people, but it's at the same time, it'll sound like an old childhood song. Nowhere did they achieve that better with the song Edelweiss, which basically fooled the very country that shunned
yes.
the sound of music for decades into believing that it was an Austrian folk song. And if that is not the ultimate testament of music genius from a pair of Jews from New York City,
yeah.
then I don't know what is.
That's a great point, because Edelweiss was mistaken on both sides of the Atlantic for an old Austrian folk song.
In 1959, at the Broadway debut of The Sound of Music, there's a great anecdote that someone came to the stage door up to Theodore Bickel, who was playing the role of Captain Von Trapp, and said, I loved your rendition of Edelweiss. Of course, I prefer the German lyric.
Well, there is a German
not
lyric.
Not in 1959.
Maybe not in 59.
But yeah. That was a case of someone thinking, oh, this is an old Austrian song.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, bless my homeland forever.
We're speaking with Peter Kiesewalter, of the founder of the Brooklyn Run Funk Orchestra, or Orchestrata, who did a Sound of Music remake back in 2011, and with Linda Holmes, writer at NPR's pop culture blog Monkey See, and our Soundcheck Smackdown today, debating The Sound of Music, which returns to TV on Thursday, December 5th, NBC airing The Sound of Music Live, starring Carrie Underwood and others. Now, Linda, in your article, and again, people can read A Complete Curmudgeon's Guide to the Sound of Music on our website, soundcheck.org. Your problems are not just with some of Hammerstein's lyrics, but what about the story itself, especially the character of Liesl?
Yeah, well, you know, you've got the whole 16 going on 17 business where Liesl is clearly experiencing her burgeoning sexuality and I linked in the piece to a wonderful McSweeney's article that was written a while ago in The Voice of the Baroness, who explains, and it is true, that Liesl is quite intent on losing her virginity to the mailman. Now, when they go through this scene, Liesl is experiencing, you know, she's young, she's lovely, she's starting to think about herself as a grown woman, and she's got the, you know, Rolf, the mailman and future Nazi, standing there sort of putting her off and calling her a baby, and it's very, I don't know, he's not a very romantic figure to me, even before he becomes a Nazi.
Peter?
I think he's a tragic character in this movie. That might be one facet that, and by the way, the story is not by Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's actually a real story, and yeah, liberties were taken, but yeah, that might be one area that has not aged as gracefully as others.
Let's hear the song. It's called 16 Going on 17.
You wait, little girl, on an empty stage for fate to turn the light on. Your life, little girl, is an empty page that men will want to write on. You are 16, going on 17, baby, it's time to think. Better beware, be canny and careful, baby, you're on the brink. You are 16, going on 17, fellows will fall in line. Eager young lads and roués and cads will offer you food and wine. Totally unprepared are you to face a world of men. Timid and shy and scared are you of things beyond your ken. You need someone older and...
16 going on 17. Boy, even Peter Kiesewalter, the defender of Sound of Music here today, admits that might not be the golden moment of this.
Isn't the irony of his delivery, like, evident? I mean, we shouldn't take it the lyric at face value because he's portrayed as being very insecure. And it's kind of cute and ironic, isn't it?
I don't know. Linda, do you find that cute and ironic?
No. I do not find the mailman either cute or ironic.
So we're talking about The Sound of Music, the topic of this edition of our Soundcheck Smackdown. Linda Holmes, NPR's pop culture blogger from Monkey See and host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can read her article, A Complete Curmudgeon's Guide to the Sound of Music, at soundcheck.org. Peter Kiesewalter is musician and arranger and Sound of Music enthusiast. And Peter, I mentioned before the last time you were here, your Brooklyn Rundfunk Orchestrata was playing some of the music that you had rearranged of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah.
You told us that Rodgers and Hammerstein, you put them in the same pantheon of musical greats as Puccini and Verdi.
Well, if you look at the reviews of The Sound of Music when it came out, and first of all, if we're debating the movie, I don't think the greatness is up for debate. I mean, 5 Academy Awards, on every top film list. I mean, there's a tacit admission here that this is a great movie. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here, right? So the music and the whole gestalt thing is another thing. But I do put them in the same pantheon as someone like Puccini, who suffered the same, almost word for word, same withering criticism after some of his operas. He was accused of being too sweet, sentimental, naive, saccharine.
So were these accusations leveled at Rodgers and Hammerstein as well?
Oh, after The Sound of Music, absolutely. I mean, it was one of those things where the popular acclaim was deafening,
mm-hmm.
and the critical acclaim was quite lukewarm, you know. And critics, mostly the curmudgeon whose distaste in all things popular and, God forbid, tuneful, revealed the pain of their own failed artistic lives. They just couldn't handle it, something. But you got to put this in historical context as well. 1959, when this came out, and I will argue, and I can for hours, that this
evidently
put the nail in the coffin of Western music, from motets, oratorios, symphonies, operas, sonatas, concertos. Boom, done, finished. Rock and roll was just starting to come onto the scene and changed everything. And everyone was freaking out. Composers were freaking out and were scared and didn't know what to do. And I think this is the Sound of Music, literally the day it opened in November 1959, said so long, farewell to Western music as we knew it for hundreds and hundreds of years.
So
that is definitely the first connection I've ever heard drawn between The Sound of Music and the birth of rock and roll.
Yeah.
It's so painfully obvious to me, but only after spending way too much time getting under
you
the
know,
hood.
I think that you know, there are lots of reasons to question the actual greatness of things that have won a bunch of awards. Believe me when I tell you that the greatness of everything that has won a bunch of Academy Awards is not above question. There are many movies that have won Academy Awards that of which people deeply question the greatness, including something like, for example, Titanic or Crash. This has continued up into the present day. The idea that you can close the book on the greatness of a movie by talking about how many Academy Awards it won is not unique to The Sound
you
of Music.
You can't argue that it is not a stunning technical and artistic achievement, however. And I'm talking about Titanic and The Sound of Music. I mean, just from a strictly movie-making perspective, it is a brilliant thing. The editing, the cinematography, the everything, the stage numbers, whether you like the material or not, is completely another matter.
But you like the material enough that you sort of, you know, lifted the hood
right.
and went under there and sort of started mucking around yourself.
My argument has nothing to do with the critical or popular acclaim. It has everything to do with my personal belief in the staggering artistic genius that this musical is.
All right, let's hear a little bit of Peter's band in action. The Brooklyn Rundfunk Orchestrata recorded an album in 2011 called The Hills Are Alive.
How do you solve our problem life?
See how pliable the music is?
Yeah.
It survives any treatment.
Is that Everett Bradley singing?
That is the great Everett Bradley.
Did he have his light-up afro when he was
not in the studio that day, okay. Sometimes live.
Anything about The Sound of Music that you maybe wish were different?
Wish were different? Well, I mean, there were some pretty massive liberties taken from the actual story.
Of the Von Trapp family.
Of the actual Von Trapp story, which were Hollywoodized a little bit.
Mm.
I actually think the true story is a very compelling and may have been maybe a little less what some people might refer to as being saccharine or sweet had it been told in its truer sense.
Mm. So
you know, it's an amazing story, really. And it's the story of America. I mean, it's
A story of immigration.
Well, it's how American does it get? A family fleeing an oppressive situation.
Right.
Some are coming here in search of a better life.
So how do you guys feel about the remake, the prospect of watching Carrie Underwood as Maria on live television?
You know, I'm told that, and I've not heard this myself, but I am told that they are doing primarily the stage musical and not the movie, which would take out a few elements, including the goat puppet show and some other things. I'll be interested to hear whether that's actually what they wind up doing, because if they wind up sticking closer to the stage version, it would be interesting to see people who are so accustomed to seeing the movie exposed to more what the structure of the musical was. There are certainly some people involved in this version, especially Audra McDonald, who's really a favorite of mine. You know, you can't argue with Audra McDonald, even though there are many things I would rather hear her sing than Climb Every Mountain.
What about you, Peter?
I'm psyched. Like I say, I think 100 years from now, they're going to be playing the Sound of Music like we're doing operas these days. And I think it's a bold and exciting choice that they have a pop singer, and I'll call Carrie Underwood a pop singer.
Sure,
as opposed to someone who's from the music theater world. And I think I'm excited to see what she does with this because, like I say, this music is pliable. It has withstood the test of time. It will continue, whether people like it or not, to withstand the test of time. And people sing it because they love it. They love it.
So that's on Thursday, December 5th, on NBC, The Sound of Music Live, starring Carrie Underwood and Audra McDonald and Stephen Moyer and all the rest. The subject of our Soundcheck Smackdown today has been The Sound of Music. Linda Holmes has been with us from NPR in Washington, D.C. Her article is called A Complete Curmudgeon's Guide to the Sound of Music. It's fun reading at soundcheck.org. Peter Kiesewalter, multi-instrumentalist arranger, sound of music enthusiast. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And let's get a little preview of Carrie Underwood singing The Sound of Music from the CBS special called Movies Rock last year.
The hills fill my heart with the sound of music. My heart wants to sing every song it hears. My heart wants to beat like the wings of the birds that rise. Trees. My heart wants to sigh like a chime that flies from a church on a breeze.
The hills are alive with the sound of Detroit rapper Danny Brown. This rising star of independent hip-hop recently made a star turn in a much-talked-about music video for the Bob Dylan classic Like a Rolling Stone. He joins us to perform tracks off his new album, Old, in our studio. This is Soundcheck.
Spit a 16 straight with no punch. Remember all for dinner, all we ate was Captain Crunch. Now we blow big notes on our way to brunch. Went from good fella to commissary slips. Now I got back up, man, every time I slept. Never ever quit, I just kept on pursuing. Teacher always asked me, what was I doing?
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Even in a crowded field of hip-hop megastars, there's no denying that Danny Brown is a straight-up original. The dynamic rapper burst out of Detroit's underground hip-hop scene with the highly praised album XXX in 2011 and recently released a follow-up called Old. He's here with me today in the studio along with his DJ Skywalker, and they're going to play some songs from that new record. This one is called Dope Song. It's Danny Brown live on Soundcheck.
Years old, so wild, I've been through all the desert. Came up off the porch straight, serving off the Kezar. Long time ago, I don't do that no more. This the last time I'ma tell you, wanna hear it?
Here it goes.
It was me and Baby Jane, with an ounce of one night. Rolling up to all the dimes, same clothes from yesterday. Had a smoker running, cast out paper written stones. When I nerd came and raked on the roof and smoke bombs. Mess with rat chicken, head front up. Lost a sack, but I got back. Cause the dice ain't risk hitting. It was me and Carbone. Making dice in the lot. Call me popping no dough. Silent righteous, I hot. Bank roll in my pocket. So everybody know me. Went home and gave my mama 300 for some groceries. We hit the mall and bar. Hit that club and spin it up. Now I'm back to square A. With some squares to get up.
Dope song. Dope song.
song, dope 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 song.
Crack hat Lisa, she used to be thick, had sex with a trick, and now she's sick. She offer you some if you give her some drugs, just make sure you get it.
You better wear a glass.
I'm sick of all these homies with their 10-year roster. You ain't doing no more, homie, lying to the shark. So take this as a diss song, cause this is my last song.
Not my last dope song.
Drop my last dope song. Dope song, dope song, dope song, dope song. Dope song, 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 dope song.
Dope song from Danny Brown, live on Soundcheck with Sky Walker, the DJ here in our Soundcheck studio as well. You'll find that song on Danny's new album called Old. Danny Brown joining me here at the microphone. Good to have you
hey,
with us
what's
on
up,
Soundcheck.
Man? What's up, man?
That song's a pretty good example of something that you kind of ping-pong throughout the record, which is the high manic voice and then the deeper, mm-hmm. more dramatic voice.
Mm-hmm.
They don't often appear in the same song together. Are they, you know, are they four different things?
I guess it's a part of my personality, I guess, in some sense. Like, if I'm excited about something, my voice probably get a little higher pitch. If I'm happy about something, you know. If I'm upset about something, it'll probably get a little lower pitch, you know,
yeah.
And be a little more aggressive, you know.
Now, Dope Song, if I'm remembering the sequence of the record right, this is the first song on side B
mm-hmm.
of the record.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it is divided like an old vinyl record into A and B.
Mm-hmm.
Were you thinking of, I mean, you know, are you a fan of music from the 60s and the 70s,
yeah,
the LP
yeah.
era?
I mean, it was once a point I had a lot of vinyl in my house because I was, you know, trying to make beats at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I didn't end up being so good at, but it was okay. I had fun. But so I was collecting a lot of vinyl and going out and buying vinyl a lot. But I think I was, it more so for me, come from, you know, being a kid was tapes. And you had a side A and a side B on tapes, you know?
Right.
So my whole, me growing up was tapes. I had shoeboxes full of tapes, you know?
You grew up in Detroit.
Yeah.
Still live there?
Yeah.
How much of Detroit is in this album?
Detroit is in me in general. I don't think I could, you know, as much as I want to escape it, I'm still Detroit to the heart, to the fullest, you know? So I think that's the scenery, that's the environment, that's the whole,
yeah.
that's where everything takes place in this album is Detroit.
And is it a place that you want to escape from, or, you know, are you getting a little more optimistic?
I wouldn't necessarily say escape, because it's not the actual city that frustrates me than the actual people sometimes, you know?
So you have no problem with the city, it's
yeah.
just the people in it.
Yeah, it's just the mentality. But I guess it's just when you've been in a place like Detroit for so long, you can't blame people for the way they act, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when people hear these songs, they naturally assume that they're autobiographical. You
mm-hmm.
know, they're sung from a very, or, you know, wrapped from a very personal point of view. Are they autobiographical, or you know, is it just kind of a reflection of what you see around you?
No, I think most of my songs, I mean, pretty much the majority of all my songs, I'm writing about myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just talking about what I've been through and where I'm trying to go in life. But then I also make songs where I'm just trying to have fun.
Right.
Sometimes I just want to flex my lyrical muscle on somebody, you know, and sometimes I would like to see a girl dance off some of my music, you know. So I think, you know, it all plays its part. I'm just not going to be the guy that just sit there and say I'm just, you know. I actually, when I make these albums, I do want to make them like a time capsule for that point of my life, you know.
Yeah.
But I still want to have fun, too. You know?
So now this album is like for sale, which sounds like a ridiculous thing for me to say, except, you know, your earlier stuff was
mm-hmm.
released online.
Yeah.
And so did you approach this record differently, knowing that that was going to be the case, that this would be something that would be in stores? And
yeah,
stuff?
I mean, I looked at it because as many projects as I made and put out for free, I looked at this one like it was my first one.
Right.
You know, like all those were like demos or just me making, you know, songs in the basement, you know, and this was my first time where I knew it was going to be a lot of people hearing this album that probably never heard of me, you know.
Right.
So I approached this project as if it was my first one, and that's why I went back and, like, because a lot of my music right now is probably more to the side B side, so I had to show people the side A side. If you just not came on board with me, I had to, you know, catch you up to where, how I got to this point.
Right.
You know?
So how would you describe the difference between the A side and the B side for people who are coming to your music for the first time?
To me, honestly, the content and the lyrics is not too much far off different, but I would say side A is just more traditional, you know, hip hop. But we was trying to push the boundaries on that and make it a lot more psychedelic than just average boom bap, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And side B is just the electronic side, you know? And that was just the party side. That's the have fun side, you know? But it's, you know, it's pros and cons to each side, you know?
Right. So you do a lot of the festival
mm-hmm.
circuit.
Yeah, yeah. So
side B is...
I have to make those songs to, you know, to play for those crowds, because it was a time where I didn't have those songs and I was playing for those crowds and it was like, it wasn't that fun, you know? And now I'm having a great time performing these songs, you know?
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Danny Brown. The album is called Old. Why? Why is it called Old?
I guess to me it just means past, you know? Oh, this is my past, you know. Everything becomes old one day. Mm-hmm. And it was just a play on words. I like the fact that people call my new album Old already.
Right.
You know, it's funny. So it's cool.
And there are some, you know, kind of looks back at music, as is often the case, mm-hmm. at earlier forms of music. You talked about the side A, side B, looking mm-hmm. back to the days of cassettes. The song you're going to do for us next, Lonely, begins with a sample of a line in French.
Mm-hmm.
The translation is, maybe the bird sleeping inside of each of us will rise up.
I didn't know that. You just told me. I didn't know, but that's great that means that. I'm glad it didn't.
Wazow, the bird. Mm-hmm. Where is that from?
Actually, the producer of that record, Paul White, he always sending me beats, and he always using like some of the craziest samples, and he's like, he's really out there. You know, he's with the psychedelic, you know what I'm saying, way mm-hmm. of production, rap music, rap music.
Little sitar in one of the songs.
Yeah, and, Return. That's right? In the Return.
Right.
So yeah, he's like one of my favorite guys to work with, because he actually pushes the boundaries of rap music right now, you know, so I really have a great time working with him. But I didn't know it just sounded good to me.
And then there's like a French song that sort of provides the sample for that. I got to say, this is like my favorite track off the record. So
Thank you. It's one of my favorites, too.
You want to play it for us?
All right, cool.
All right. Danny Brown with us on Soundcheck. And Skywalker, the DJ here in the Soundcheck studio. The album is called Old, even though it's still pretty new. And Danny Brown is playing with Sleigh Bells tonight and tomorrow night here in New York at Terminal 5 and playing live for us here in the Soundcheck studio.
Bien, peut-être. L'oiseau. L'oiseau qui dormait en chacun de nous. C'est la vôtre.
You how the streets feel. Everybody thirsty and they looking for a refill. If they ain't eating, guns barking at your doggy back. Get took out for your takeout, now you carry out. Murder by delivery, Marriott to Paramount. So just call the Paramount, her homies might air it out. Judging book by cover, so we never educated. It ain't about races, poor and rich, segregated. Used to get the bacon, dog, you gotta go ham. Used to be lost until I found who I am. But it took the hook to eat the pond on my hand. Locked trying to get real creative with some spam. Locked ain't a jam cause your homie served butter. Just to get a little bread, had to keep the mayo smothered. All I really wanted was to overdub my vocals. But no one ever thought that I would take it past local. I like top of totem, and somebody should have told him that his money grew on trees, being rich a dime a dozen. So I'm smoking by my lonely, right by myself, I don't need your help, homie. Cause don't nobody really know me. I said nobody really know me. See, that's going on a limb. And I used to serve trees and I used to rock films. Radio head thing, fiends with the bend. Back when granny used to tell me, stay out of in. Letting the co-air out, trying to know my whereabouts. Gone for 3 days and nobody never heard about how I got them Jordans. But that ain't too important when I got a chick pregnant and I'm stacking for abortion. But all I ever wanted was to get myself a portion. Wet up off the handy, got your homie self-absorbing. Smoking on the bogey, no bust down. Who can I trust now? Lady snitching, got the whole block now. Now we gon' eat now, no rebound. When you're blocked out, belly of the beast now. Now you got me feeling trapped and I can't look back. When the road ahead is gold and the past is made of ash. And I'm going through the trash, trying to find a little treasure. Living for the better, trying to get myself together. So I'm smoking by my lonely, right by myself. I don't need your help, homie. Cause don't nobody really know me. I say nobody really know me.
Song's called Lonely from Danny Brown. It's on the new album called Old. Danny Brown and Skywalker live on Soundcheck today. That is such a beautiful song. I mean, the sample
you.
Is great.
Thank you, man.
That's one of Paul White's tracks. Mm-hmm. How many different producers did you work with on this record?
It's Skywalker. Paul White is like the main two, the guys that I work with. But then you got like Darky Freaker, Oh No worked on a bunch, A-Track, and I think that's almost, I mean, Purity Ring, you know?
Yeah, Purity Ring is on the song 25 Bucks, which is another cool song on the record. The album's called Old by Danny Brown. Is it hard for you to come on a public radio station and do clean versions of these songs?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't say it's hard. No, it's not hard, but I mean, I like to cuss. I think it takes a little bit away from the song, you know, a little bit. It gives it less of a bite, but I guess, you know, it's fun.
So you've learned to make your peace with PG-rated versions of these songs?
Yeah, I've made my peace with it. It's nothing worse than, like, going to like Best Buy or something, buying a CD and buying a clean version by mistake. It makes me want to just slip in the bathtub on purpose or something, man. Like,
all right. I want to ask you about the Bob Dylan video for the song Like a Rolling Stone, where they've released this interactive video where instead of watching one version of the video, you can scroll through like 100 different channels of all these different people, famous and not famous, lip-syncing the song. One channel is you. How did that happen?
Pretty much the guys at Walter Pictures. Those are the same guys that did the video for Grown Up for me.
Your song.
Yeah. So when it came about to do this, I mean, they reached out for me. I mean, they could have picked any rapper. They could have picked any artist.
Like, yeah.
Nobody's going to say no to Bob Dylan. So I'm just super honored by the situation. You know.
Were you a fan before this?
I mean, I've watched a lot of his documentaries or, you know, stuff like that and read about him a lot. But I can't say I was real familiar with his music like that.
Well, you had to get familiar.
I had to learn that song. Yeah. I had to learn that song. And for me, listening to that song over and over, I got a new perspective on what he was about for that time, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would be more definitely getting into some more Bob Dylan, you know?
Yeah. Now, what did that do for you as a songwriter? Because this album really, you know, this is not just like rhymes over beats.
Yeah,
You're really getting into some songwriting.
Yeah. I mean, like somebody like Bob Dylan, you know, like I think like
sets
he was
the bar
like
pretty high.
Being like
he?
Ahead of his time with what he was doing and stuff, you know? So, I don't know. I just, in some sense, I hope it's like a correlation with that. Like, me and him are like kind of like the same in that vein. But I don't know. Like, Bob Dylan, I think he was like the first guy rapping to me. The way I took that song, I was like, he's like rapping. It's not really like singing, you know? And I don't know. To me, like, his songs now, what I'm seeing, like, and you can hear it and you can take it for what it is, but it's nothing like reading it. Like, me hearing and learning that song, but when I read it, it was like, I get it, you know? Like, he. So I don't know. He's like a real songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And one thing that I noticed in one of the shots in your video channel for Like a Rolling Stone, you're wearing a Rolling Stones T-shirt. Are you like a music history nerd?
I love to study music, and I love like anything that was considered to be a classic. I feel like I should know why. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've listened to any album, like if any magazine put out a top 100 list, you know, I go through a lot of, like, Metacritics and stuff like that and just, I love, like, reissues and stuff, you know what I'm saying, when albums come back out, because then, you know, so I always pick up on a reissue, you know.
So you're into the classics.
Yeah, for the most part.
Anything out there now that's really exciting you?
I mean, as far as, like, in music?
Yeah.
I mean, new or old?
No, it doesn't have to be music.
Right now, I think I'm actually just been going back to my roots in the old, and I've been just enjoying listening to, like, ghetto tech a lot. So I don't know what's up with that. Like, I was just listening to the Detroit Grand Poobas album yesterday, like, crazy. I was like, what is going on with me?
Now, how old? We're talking, what, 20 years?
Ghetto tech? I mean, Cybertron and Juan X. I guess that was early 80s, yeah.
So it's more than 20 years.
I mean, that's like, you know, I was my childhood, to be honest, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's lots of different influences going into the new record, which is called Old. It is out now. Will you be home for the holiday?
Yeah, I'll be home. I'll be able to get me some good turkey and some chitlins. I like chitlins.
All right. Northern style chitlins?
Yeah, for sure. With hot sauce.
All right, Danny, it's been great having you and Skywalker here with us, man. In the Soundcheck studio today.
It's great being here.
On my way to get Wonder Bread. Right. I swear I just Wonder Bread. Right. Mommy gave me a truck up with stamps. Say, go get some bread and I'll pop and come back. Walk out that door, first thing I see. Hey, don't miss it and they're looking at me. Standing right there in front of the porch with a pipe in his hand and the other a torch. I kept it moving, I worry about that.
There's more where this came from. Here, another live performance from Danny Brown on our website at soundcheck.org.
What do I find? Hey, junkie, why laughing high crying? Blacking out cars, that ain't that bread. And that's what I've seen on the way to get bread. On the way to get Wonder Bread. I swear I just Wonder Bread. On the way to get Wonder Bread. I swear I just Wonder Bread. On the way to get Wonder Bread. I swear I just Wonder Bread.
Tomorrow on the show, our series on introducing your parents to new music concludes as we hear from some of you. And there's still time to share a story about the risks and rewards of getting your parents to listen to new stuff. Just leave a voicemail at 866-939-1612 or post a comment at soundcheck.org. That number again, 866-939-1612. Also tomorrow, executive chef Michael Anthony of the New York restaurant Gramercy Tavern is a big fan of Wilco. We'll introduce him to that band's drummer, Glenn Cochi, and we'll talk about music and food and Thanksgiving. Also, live music tomorrow from the big Brooklyn band Rubble Bucket. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.